Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
How are you, Allison?
I'm very tired.
No.
I know. It sucks to come in tired, but I've been doing a lot. I'm moving.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're moving into a big girl place.
Big girl place. Kind of. Still renting.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's not an apartment.
No, but it's not an apartment. That's true. So, yes. And it's going to be a whole house. It's going to be great for me and my little cats.
Little kitty cats. They're going to love it.
Yes, but I'm here today. I'm excited. How are you, Jane?
I'm good. It's a little hot out for me.
It's really hot.
But, you know, I just try to keep reminding myself that this is the coolest it's going to be.
It's true. You'll maybe never have a summer this cool ever again.
Yeah, so I just, you know, try to think of it that way and really, I feel fortunate that it's this cool because in the future it's going to be a lot hotter.
It's true. It's true.
We're destroying the planet. Speaking of that, I just watched Birdemic.
Yes.
Which is
a movie about birds destroying.
Well, they are destroying the planet because of global warming.
Right, they're coming after us.
Yeah, that's like the whole plot of that movie.
It's like The Happening.
And it's like what's happening with orcas right now.
Which is good.
I'm on the orca side.
Me too, I don't live near the ocean.
Yeah, also, I am so done with like all of the people on social media being like, why are you making fun of the people in the submarine?
Oh, how could I not make fun of them? It's literally like a series of, oh no, the consequences of my own actions. Literally can't even imagine how much I don't care. It's like, I saw a thing that was like, it's not right to like joke about this, da da da. And someone was like, you're right, it's not. They're not jokes. They're my honest and true feelings.
Right.
Told in a humorous way. But they're not jokes.
Yeah, I feel that way.
I feel that way. I would say that seriously. I am glad.
Oh, man. That's our take on the submarine.
No, I could not care less. I think, honestly, the response, it's literally 700 migrants die on a ship, which could have been rescued. But wasn't rescued because everyone was diverting their resources to look for five people who, within the time that they went missing, were almost certainly dead.
Yeah, they imploded.
We knew that they were, the odds of them being alive were so, so slim. And, like, you can argue, oh, number one, we knew they were going to die. There was literally, like, barely a world. There was, you know, a 0.001% chance that they were alive and were sitting on the surface and just couldn't get out.
For real.
But that's not what happened. Nope. Clearly.
Ugh.
And they knew that. If we knew that, the experts most certainly knew it.
Right.
And they still were diverting all those resources to find them. And for what? There's no bodies to recover.
Yeah.
They were fucking obliterated under the ocean.
Being a human is exhausting.
Yeah. It's just like, I can't bring myself to care about that when 700 migrant people were drowning and could have been saved.
Right.
But you didn't save them because you were looking for, nothing.
Yeah.
You were looking for literally scraps of a piece of a toy submarine, a Lego submarine that they submerged under.
For real.
Oh my lord.
Speaking of this movie, how long until Always Sunny does a spoof of this, does a bit of them getting locked in a submarine?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, they kind of already done it with The Gang Goes to Hell.
Yeah.
But I don't see them getting locked in the submarine so much as somehow investing into, I can see Frank, like, investing in this.
Right.
I can see Frank, like, pushing
them to go, and he's gonna say, like, no, it's fine that you can't open it from the inside.
Yeah, yeah, Frank. And then when they're like, Frank, what the hell? It seems like you need to open it from the inside. They're like, what? There's more money. You know how expensive it is to get a hatch that opens two ways?
No. I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
Actually.
Actually, I have $250,000 a person. Actually, have $1.5 million sitting in here right now. I mean, I'm sure it costs more than that to build, but at the same time, they can take multiple people. Not anymore. And, clearly, the thing is, too, like, when you think about all the things that went wrong, so clearly it was just people cutting corners to save
just,
money.
It's just negligence.
It's so clearly just them cutting corners to save money. Mm-hmm. Every single thing that they did makes 100% sense when you consider the idea of, like, prioritizing profit. It's like, I want this thing because it's cheaper. I want to do this because of this. I want to rush this because it takes too long, and I want to get butts in seats. Like, then there you go. That's what happens. In, like, every single famous catastrophe, literally ever, is never like, and this one thing happened, and if that one thing hadn't happened, they would have been fine. It's like a series of increasingly worse decisions on every single person's part.
Yes.
The waiver those rich people had to sign literally said that they were going to die like four times. Or that they had a high risk of death like four times.
So, and say what you want about James Cameron, but he has really figured out like the way to go down there and look at the Titanic. Because his stuff is like, it's like a clear kind of material, and it's made to where if there's anything that goes wrong with it, it will evacuate you immediately. It'll shoot you out.
Good.
And that's like, it'll shoot you towards the surface, which is like how they've done this for over 20 years, and it just they've done it over and over and over again to make sure it's the safest as possible, but that's too expensive for this guy.
It costs money.
He doesn't have that Titanic money. Movie money.
No.
Titanic 1997 movie.
Yeah, not actual Titanic, which, of course, we all know is broke.
She's a broke bitch.
Yeah, she's fucking rusty at the bottom of the damn ocean now. I honestly just could not care less. Like,
it's just very funny.
It is funny, and I like to laugh at it.
Yeah.
Speaking of other drama, I know we're going on for a while here, but, you know, this is...
We haven't been here for a minute, so we want to catch up with you.
You following this Colleen Ballinger?
Holy shit. Oh my god. You and some of my other friends are just like sending me nonstop like Colleen Ballinger.
Dude, it's literally the funniest shit that's ever happened. And like, I really didn't know anything. Okay, like, I did not watch Miranda.
Oh, I didn't either. I knew of her,
right,
of course.
She was really famous.
Right.
But I didn't watch Miranda Sings, and I didn't know any of the shit until the song came out. And then I saw people posting about the song, and I watched, and the very first lines I hear are like, not a groomer, just a loser. And I was like, what? Colleen Ballinger's a groomer? So I started looking it up. Now, I will get, here's the thing, too. I don't think that this is an impossible thing to come back from at all.
No.
Her accusations, people have come back from way worse.
Oh, yeah.
Way worse.
And David O. Russell's still making movies.
Like, literally.
And admitted to molesting his
niece. She could not have picked a worse thing to do.
Now people, like, she could have come back from it. Now she can't.
No!
She can't anymore after the video!
Nobody's on your side now. That's why your PR team said, shut your fucking mouth, Colleen. Holy shit. It was amazing. Like,
It's just watching, like, a plane crash. Like,
like, the pilot's the one pushing it down. You're like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Just flying towards the ground.
The co-pilot's like, please don't. And then, like, we crash. And she's like, what the fuck?
I didn't want to crash. It's crazy.
Dude, it was so...
The only thing I've ever groomed are my two Persian cats.
You came in my bony little back. I just can't, like, tell you how dumb of a move that was.
Oh, it's so stupid. It's like, but like, okay, I sent you a video, but I think it got taken down. It was a TikTok, and it was like how every YouTube star's like apology video.
No, he's on brand.
Is on brand. He's on exactly. Brand. It got too. Deleted, but I'm glad you saw it before it got deleted.
It's true.
So, it's so true though.
It's just like, honestly, everything she got accused of is weird
and kind and of like
and certainly unethical.
Unethical, absolutely.
Certainly unethical.
Yeah.
But nothing like illegal.
Creepy,
and nothing,
yes.
And nothing that you couldn't just say, like, I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, I'm truly
I'm so fucking stupid. You could have
just be like, I'm a dumbass. And, like, honestly, this is, like, my biggest... Honestly, I think all of it kind of boils down to this. She seems very, like, like, just not, like, immature is not the right word necessarily.
Right.
But, like, she has, like, arrested development.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And, like, not the show, everyone. The actual, like,
the term.
The actual term. Like, to me, it's like every single decision she made is like, obviously an adult should know not to make that decision.
Right.
But it does feel to me like she is a 16-year-old.
Yes.
Like, even now, like, when I heard how old she was, she's like 35, I was like, what?
Crazy.
I was like, she's 35 years old? I thought she'd be like 30, max. Ugh. Like, I knew she wasn't my age.
Right.
But, like, she feels like my age right now.
Or even younger.
Or even younger. Because, like, every single thing she got accused of, like, the using unpaid fan labor, the
sending them weird stuff.
Sending them weird, like,
talking about her, like, sex life.
Jokes that you, and here's the thing, too. At 14, I probably would have been like, haha.
Ha, so funny.
So funny.
But now that you're an adult, you're being like, oh, yeah, that was weird.
It's weird, and it's weirder because she was like 25 when it was happening.
It's weird.
Like, I, at 25, know not to do that shit. Now, at 14, I would not have necessarily known not to do that shit. But that's what I'm saying. She's like stuck, like, at 16 years old. And then her apology to me is like, her apology is even more like that. It's like, this is the reaction of a child.
Yes.
This is the reaction of a literal child for not, number one, not, even if you think you legitimately did nothing wrong, which just lacks a tremendous amount of introspection.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a tremendously small amount of introspection there. Even if you think you did nothing wrong. from a business perspective, you could not have made a worse move. Just apologize and move on.
Yeah, no one's gonna take you seriously ever again.
No,
ever.
Oh my god, and like, there's so much stuff. I saw this like girl on TikTok who does PR talking about all the things that Colleen could do, not just to do damage control, but to actually do the damage reduction or like harm reduction. And she could, you know, put age limits on her shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do jokes where you have audience members stick their hands down your pants, maybe don't let 7-year-olds in. And then maybe don't also pick them to come up on stage. You could apologize to the people who you did hurt. And here's the thing, too, like, I don't understand. I get that, like, sometimes you don't necessarily know the ages of the kids in your crowd. Maybe you pick someone that's, like, 14, you think they're, like, 17. You don't pick a 7-year-old.
Yeah, I think you can tell who a 7-year-old is.
You definitely don't think a 17-year-old or a 7-year-old is anywhere close to the age of a person that should put their hands down your pants. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, if you're gonna have an all-ages show, you should keep it friendly for all
the Yeah.
This idea that it's like, well, their parents brought them, and it's like, because their parents assumed it was an all-ages show.
Right.
And that's because that's what you sold tickets to.
Yeah, and it's not an all-ages
show.
Also,
I think it's ridiculous if she says, like, I just trust the parents to whatever, whatever. I think it's a little ridiculous to expect that parents are going to watch the content of every single thing that their kid likes.
Yeah.
To determine, and I mean, like, maybe they should.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't really remember Miranda Sings, if that's what they watch about her.
Yeah.
Because I could say at this point, it's pretty much like half Colleen, half Miranda. Miranda Sings isn't particularly non-family friendly. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff pointed out recently about there's a lot of pedophile jokes in Miranda Sings content.
Interesting.
Like, Miranda has this character that's like her uncle who like clearly like molests her, and there's like many jokes for like, you know, the 9 years or whatever she's been doing this. It comes up a lot. About how Miranda gets molested by her uncle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so not exactly kid-friendly.
No, but also, it's not like every single video is about that. You know what I mean?
There's
plenty of Miranda Sings videos where she's just, like, doing her shtick.
Yeah.
And I think that if a parent saw, a parent could see a reasonable amount of Miranda Sings content, think that it was fine for their kid, and then seeing a show that advertises all ages for Miranda Sings, I think there's a reasonable expectation of family friendliness.
Right.
Especially coming from a YouTuber who is for children, like preteens.
Yeah.
I mean, also, Colleen's a huge YouTuber. She has those demographic numbers.
Right.
She has to know percentage of her audience is what age. Like, we know that.
Yeah.
And
she's either, like, a creep, one, or she's, like, a fucking dumbass.
To me,
a dumbass edgelord.
Yeah, I think it's the second one, to be honest. And not that I don't think she is creepy. I think her actions are creepy. I don't think she's intending them to be.
Right.
And the reason why I say this is she like, enough stuff has come out about her now that I feel like if anything super inappropriate with a specific fan had ever happened, mm-hmm. we would know about it.
Right.
I just think she's kind of a person who I just think doesn't see her own power. Like, mm-hmm. she doesn't see power dynamics. She doesn't see that she's famous and that gives her a power dynamic.
Or older.
She doesn't see that she's older and that gives her a power dynamic. Like, there's all these things that are contributing to her manipulating, like, children. And she just, like, won't accept that she has those powers.
On her bony little back.
And yeah, and she's, like, a skinny white lady. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's a big part of it, too, is she just, like, mm-hmm. refuses to see.
No introspection, again.
She has no introspection. She's a dumbass.
Yeah.
She's, like, a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
She, like, stopped progressing at whatever time right. we're in.
I think, yeah, Edgelord dumbass.
Edgelord dumbass. And who, by the way, like, regardless of if you think what she did was, like, really that serious or not, like, welcome to the world. Your fucking shtick is old. People have been asking for Miranda Sings to not exist as a character forever, because mm-hmm. she is clearly based on mentally handicapped people.
Yeah,
clearly
Ooh.
Making fun of that.
Ooh.
Exactly, like her whole character.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And I think that's the difference between, like, I think we're going to go into, like, this also when we talk about this movie. A lot of our, like, favorite comedians, they did, like, some problematic humor, like.
Of course.
Or in the beginning. But also, I think that it takes introspection to learn and grow from that.
It also.
And to stop doing it.
Here's the thing, too. Like, I don't. Everybody else, even Shane Dawson, okay? Shane Dawson, who I don't want to tell him I'm defending Shane Dawson, but he is a piece of shit.
Allison Dodge, Shane Dawson's biggest defender.
Yeah, don't say it. Yeah, don't say that.
Isolate that audio.
Do not say that. I do think that even he saw the writing on the wall and yeah. was like, this stuff that I did isn't funny. He deleted the videos. Everyone, every early YouTube comic probably has some fairly questionable shit that they've made.
Yeah.
Because
The landscape was
uncontrolled. And the political climate was in a different place than it is now. And I do think that, like, now, do I think Shane Dawson, like, really gives a shit? No. I do think I think, like, Jenna Marbles.
Yeah.
She really gives a shit. She definitely,
like, feels bad.
And made changes.
Mm-hmm.
Colleen has racially insensitive shit up, which is still up, and has not been apologized for, nor ever even brought up. And not only that, her humor hasn't, like, whereas even Shane Dawson, regardless if he stopped doing the horrible sketches, because either he saw that they weren't popular or he wanted to move on, mm-hmm. his style changed with the time.
Right.
She's doing the exact same fucking character. She's on tour right now with the character that she's been doing for the last 15 years.
That's wild to me.
It's old. Like, yeah. It's stale. Like, of course it's moderately problematic. She came up with it at whatever fucking age she was.
Right. And again,
15 years ago.
Stuck there.
But she has never, like, grown out of Miranda Sings. Like, aren't you tired of that?
Right.
Even JoJo Siwa got rid of the ponytail.
It's true. So true. We all got to get rid of our ponytails, just like JoJo Siwa did.
That's right.
Our own metaphorical ponytails, is what I'm saying.
Don't cut off all your hair just because JoJo Siwa did.
Yeah.
Though, do if you want.
But do it if you want. That's our. Those are our opinions on the internet discourse that's happening right now.
Yeah, because I feel like it's important.
I think so, too, that the people know our views.
And it's a lot more interesting than this movie we're about to talk about.
Okay, I think we should preface this by saying that we are enormous Always Sunny fans.
Yes.
Enormous Charlie Day fans.
Yes.
And we love him very, very much.
Yeah. But
also, this is a mid-movie.
When you love someone, you gotta be honest.
It's so true. And there were some good parts in this movie. I will admit that.
Yeah, this movie is not all bad.
It's obviously competently filmed.
I think the bad part about this movie is the writing. The story.
Right.
It's not the acting. Well, it's a little bit the acting. But it's not the look or the feel of it that I don't like.
Right.
it's the execution.
Right. And I think there are some reasons for that that we'll get into, like some kind of contributing factors. But let's get into it.
Yeah.
A mute John Doe, played by Charlie Day, with the mental capacity of a 5-year-old, is released from a mental hospital when the state cannot afford his treatment. He begins living on the streets and taking direction from whomever he comes across. While making a biopic about Billy the Kid, the producer is incensed that method actor Sir Tom Bingsley refuses to leave his trailer. Since this costs the film time and money, the producer resorts to using a stand-in. The producer comes across the John Doe selling oranges on the street and hires him due to the striking resemblance to Bingsley. So Bingsley is also played by Charlie Day.
Yeah, yeah. The same.
Just, yeah. Who is the producer again? I need to look it.
I don't know. I'll get up the IMDb.
It's Ray Liotta.
Oh, there we go. I was like, I know it's
someone. He died.
Sad.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Lenny, who is played by Ken Jeong, is a struggling publicist who has not been able to maintain one client since moving to LA and bribes his way onto studio lots to look for talent. Lenny sees John Doe filming the biopic and misunderstands his name to be Latte Pronto due to the producer demanding coffee. After Bingsley dies in a misguided method acting technique of hanging himself, Billy the Kid is forced to continue filming with Pronto as the star. Although hindered by Pronto's lack of acting talent and his continued looks into the camera, his co-stars Christiana Dior and Chad Lookst are inspired by the supposed avant-garde performance and emulate his acting style. And I will say, from the trailer, I thought that, like, Ken Jeong's character's arc was going to be, like, the most interesting and the most, like, moving part of the film.
And I feel like that's kind of how it was sold.
Yes, and it just felt so, like, one-dimensional.
Yeah,
and whereas, like, Latte Pronto, it had a very fun, I thought his storyline was pretty fun, and I enjoyed it.
Latte Pronto has a very endearing storyline.
Well, he's like the tramp from exactly. Charlie, he's like the little tramp, look at him. I have a Charlie Chaplin lamp right there. He's like the little tramp.
And I definitely think that reads, and you are endeared to him, and you care a lot more about what happens to him than you do what happens to Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of this, like, I was really expecting a performance from Ken Jeong that was different.
Yeah.
And it was the same.
Yeah.
It was the same as I've seen him in everything, which is, like, moderately crazy, weird guy, and he plays that very well, but for this movie, it makes it difficult for him to have, like, an emotional arc. He essentially felt exactly like Kevin Chang to me. But Kevin Chang got like 6 seasons that arc, and this guy gets like an hour and a half, you know, 2 hours.
And I think that it's just his character's so shallow. And it's interesting that his character is so shallow in comparison to Latte Pronto's, who we get nothing
from.
Who has
no lines.
But he feels like a more in-depth character.
Well, and I feel like we spend a lot more time with Latte Pronto than we do with Lenny.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like we do. I just don't really feel like Lenny, like, his learning is literally, like, problem kind of a journey that we half see, and then he just comes to the realization, and that's it.
Yeah. It's really, it's not as grabbing as I anticipated it to be.
No. I was not too impressed with his performance. Honestly, I feel like Ken Jeong's both acting and story is probably the biggest drawback for this movie.
I think so, too. And I thought that it was going to be one of the highlights of it, according to, like, the marketing. And it was not.
No.
Yeah.
And I feel like I also was told a lot that Ken Jeong really felt different.
Yeah.
That, like, it didn't feel like his normal characters. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's not true. Because even though the writing wasn't necessarily super similar to a lot of his other characters, the act, the interpretation of the words was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it didn't feel anything, like, different or even, like, satisfying.
No. I don't think the resolution of this movie was that satisfying, to be honest.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Latte Pronto's, like, kind of emotional journey.
Right, like of searching for acceptance and human connection.
Yeah.
Which is like his whole thing, which I found to be a nice little story.
Yes, and I enjoy Latte Pronto. I felt like I also think another thing is you're never really endeared to Ken Jeong's character in the same way you are to Latte Pronto. Like, you're very endeared to him because you...
He's lonely. He's cast out.
He's like a little kid. He's like trying to find his way around. He's also not only that, but I do think this movie does an excellent job of replicating that old school silent film era type of feeling. I think it really captures that.
And I think Charlie does a really good job of playing that.
Yes, it encapsulates it extremely well, which is just an endearing thing to an audience. It's a recognizable thing for people that like those things, which also gives you an extra layer of loving Latte and wanting to see him succeed.
Yeah. A certain nostalgia wrapped into him as well.
Yeah, for, what is it, Larry?
Lenny.
Lenny, you don't get that.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
He just shows up. He's a real Hollywood type. He's fast and loose, and that never stops.
Yeah. Lenny plans to propel Latte Pronto into stardom by getting him an agent and representation. Pronto is befriended by Lux taking him to wild parties and showing him the Hollywood lifestyle. Simultaneously, Dior becomes infatuated with Pronto due to his sincerity. And that's Kate Beckinsale, who plays her. Dior convinces Pronto to marry her, and they adopt several children, increasing their profiles in the media. Billy the Kid is a massive success, with critics praising Pronto's performance of breaking the fourth wall by looking into camera. At the party, Lenny asks Pronto to confirm they will never end their business relationship. When Pronto cannot respond to Lenny's request, a security guard tries to escort Lenny out for disrupting the party. A fight breaks out, with Pronto being blamed and sued by the security guard. The agent asks Pronto to lay low from the media while informing him of an offer to star in Mosquito Boy, directed by Lex Tanner. Mosquito Boy is pretty silly.
Yeah.
While filming Mosquito Boy, Pronto is taken out by Lux for a night on the town, which ends with the two in jail after assaulting a paparazzo. Even though Lux was the aggressor, Pronto is blamed in the media. This further strains his relationship with his representation. While filming Mosquito Boy, Pronto is injured and a stand-in is used for the majority of the movie. Lenny promises to publicize the film into a big hit regardless. The movie is a colossal failure at the box office, and Pronto's representation leaves him. Dior is frustrated with her husband's failing stardom and controversies, so she divorces him, takes the children, and begins dating Lux. Pronto is forced to move in with Lenny, and the two bond over their mutual hardships. Lenny has a heart attack following his consumption of dozens of energy drinks. He hasn't done anything to, like, make us care.
No. Yeah. You're like, he's still, and also, his entire thing is just trying to take advantage of Latte Pronto.
Right.
And that's still happening by this point.
Yeah.
Like, he's still... It's not that Lenny cares about Latte Pronto so much that even though now he's down on his luck, he's not going to stop. It's that Lenny needs Latte Pronto because he's such a failure, and this is his first client that's had any level of success.
Right.
Like, and that's still happening by this point. Like, he still hasn't come to a realization of, like, no... I'm a real friend to Latte,
right.
And I don't need success because I have connection. That has not happened. And it should have happened by this point, because I don't give a shit that he had a heart attack.
Yeah. Pronto stays by his hospital bedside, but leaves the room when a fan wants a selfie. Due to a mix-up with a nurse and a deceased patient, Pronto believes Lenny died, while Lenny believes Pronto abandoned him. Lenny resolves to become a better person and successful publicist. Meanwhile, Pronto goes back to living on the street. Pronto befriends a homeless man named Dagger and saves his life, gaining media acclaim and is awarded the key to the city. The mayor privately encourages Pronto to run for office on an anti-corporate platform since his acting career is over. Hilarious. Again, the Pronto, like, storyline is just so much more compelling.
Yeah. Well, he's gone through a lot of emotional arcs by this point.
Yeah. The rich and powerful Coate brothers have Pronto kidnapped to discourage his political career. Ed Coate threatens his life should he oppose any of the Coates' business interests. In return for abandoning politics, Ed Coate arranges for Latte to get his representation back, minus Lenny, and another chance at a movie career. Disillusioned with filmmaking, Pronto abandons his representation and wanders the streets aimlessly. Lenny sees Pronto and chases after him. Lenny apologizes for using his friend as a meal ticket and tells Pronto he loves him. Saying his first words, Pronto responds, "I love you too," and the two leave to get dinner together and catch up.
Something I think... One of the reasons I think Latte Pronto's storyline is moderately compelling is that it's a story about a person who really has no wants. Mm-hmm. And everyone projects their wants onto him. Right. He does what Lenny wants. He does what the studio people want. Mm-hmm. He marries the woman because she wants to. He has kids because she wants to. He is going to run for office because somebody else wants to. And then mm-hmm. by the end, he chooses a path for himself.
Right, to connect with this person.
And I think that that is what's touching about that storyline. But at the same time, I feel like there's simultaneously too much happening mm-hmm. and not enough.
Right.
Like, the story is too much about Latte Pronto mm-hmm. and not enough about Lenny. Lenny has not enough going on. Latte almost has too much going on yeah. for how small of a character he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. It didn't feel like it landed the way that I think it probably did in his head.
The idea that Lenny is supposed to be the main character does not fit.
It does not read.
He has, like, main character beats, but he doesn't have main character screen time. Right. Or, I mean, think about how many plots Latte Pronto goes through.
Yeah.
While Lenny essentially goes through one.
So true. And it's just really confusing as to how we're supposed to feel all of this emotion for Lenny. And whenever, you know, I guess the emotional climax is of the film, we don't really feel for Lenny, like, when he has the heart attack.
No. And, again, it's you feel for Latte. Latte is the one who is being used by all these people.
Right.
Lenny is one of the users.
Yeah. I did want to go into a little bit about the production, because it was a little, not fraught, but just, like, I guess a little chaotic. It was announced in September 2018 that Charlie Day was set to make his directorial debut on the film El Tonto, in addition to writing and starring in it. The additions of these actors, the cast were announced the following month. In October 2018, Ray Liotta and Ken Jeong joined the cast. Principal photography began in October 2018 in Los Angeles. In February 2022, Day revealed in an interview that the film had undergone a week of reshoots in December of 2021 with Jeong, Brody, Beckinsale, and Liotta, after he wrote an additional 27 pages to the screenplay based on the advice of filmmaker Guillermo del Toro, who also suggested the film's initial title of El Tonto be discarded, and it was later retitled Fool's Paradise. So.
Yeah.
I think it felt a little disjointed in that way. I think it was, you could tell.
The story feels, also this is something, this is another criticism I have, is the jokes and stuff are almost too silly for how serious the film is.
Right.
The film looks serious. It is seriously scored. Mm-hmm. It is this kind of like homage to old Hollywood. It has that like beautiful kind of like nostalgic feel to mm-hmm. it, and then all the jokes are like silly stupid jokes,
right.
And there are so many moments where Ken Jeong's character or Charlie Day's character will almost get to a point where I feel a true emotion, will almost hit a part where I really feel emotional, and then will completely ruin it by doing just some stupid throwaway
yes.
joke.
Yeah.
That ultimately did not add anything, and if anything else, took away from the emotional moment that I was having. Like, you can never have a true emotional connection to these characters, because every single time you got close,
right.
there was, like, a dumbass joke.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, a lot of the jokes, and this is maybe just because this is what the majority of what Charlie Day has been doing for so long, mm-hmm. but I definitely felt like Always Sunny jokes
right.
in there.
Yeah.
And those jokes would be hilarious if this movie were like a...
more of a satire.
Like a satire comedy like Always Sunny right. is. And Always Sunny is like, I mean, it's raunchy and dirty
and goofy and
stupid.
And yeah.
This movie did not have stupid, silly, goofy vibes.
Right. It felt like a kind of, it felt like a guy looking for kind of human connection,
I mean,
which
you
is
put,
what.
You put all this money. I mean, think about, there's a reason like Sonny's camera style is the way that it is. Mm-hmm. This movie had gorgeous cinematography, gorgeous scoring.
Right. It was really pretty.
Like beautiful costumes, this old Hollywood feel, all these
it
recreations
great.
Of these like beautiful moments in cinema. Mm-hmm. And then they had dumbass Sunny humor.
Right.
And it just doesn't work. I mean, think about, I'm thinking of a similar feeling movie. I'm going to use La La Land, okay?
Right.
Because similar kinds of like shots,
mm-hmm.
similar feelings.
That fantastical
kind of like old Hollywood feeling. Obviously a different era, but still.
Right.
They did not have humor like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's true.
That movie has humor and is like a rom-com, kind of, mm-hmm. like a musical rom-com. But it's very, like, grounded mm-hmm. humor. This was, like, and that's, you know, that's what I was expecting. I was expecting a grounded movie.
Me too.
And from Charlie and Ken Jeong, and that's what I thought the appeal was gonna be like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. This is something so different for them, because generally both of them do stuff that's so grounded, so far out of
so
reality.
So silly, yeah.
That, and I love grounded out of reality stuff, obviously. Right. I love Sunny, I
of
love
course.
Community.
Of course, yeah, love both of them.
I love stuff that's not grounded in reality, but the way this was shot and the way it was marketed and the storyline really kind of required that it was grounded mm-hmm. in reality.
And it did not land on, it did not fire on all cylinders in that way.
No, and I don't really think there were moments where, for me, it got close, mm-hmm. but it never hit. Like, right. I found myself disappointed after yeah. many scenes. Like, a scene would happen, and it would be like, oh, this is going good. I feel like I like where this is going.
Right.
And then it would just fall flat.
Yeah. I would agree. Absolutely. And which is sad to say, because, you know, I love Charlie, and I really, really wanted this movie to be awesome.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen Blackberry yet.
Which I bet is awesome.
Which I bet is awesome, and... Okay, I will say, Charlie used to be my favorite character on Sunny, and it's quickly becoming Dennis.
Dennis is my favorite.
He's, wow.
You know Dennis is my favorite.
He's incredible. I'm obsessed with him.
you're just loving Dennis because of all the Mac Dennis fan edits.
I've always loved Dennis, but like, wow, the fact that they confirmed he's bi in this season. Thank you, Meg.
Yes, thank you, Meg. Bringing the boys what the people want.
It's so true.
Yeah, it does suck. I mean, honestly, I don't think Charlie Day lacks directorial ability. I think that, number one, this was a project he maybe had his hands on for too long.
Yeah, maybe he, like... Yeah.
He, like, overwrote it.
I think so, too.
Bit.
Yeah.
In addition, I don't think he chose the best actors for this movie, mm-hmm. either. Like, I mean, this would have been amazing for Ken Jeong's career if it had been what they said it was going to be for Ken Jeong's career.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was exactly what Ken Jeong's mm-hmm. career has been up until this point. And, like, to me, it reinforces the idea that that is his career.
Right, absolutely.
And I kind of feel the same about Charlie, too. Like, mm-hmm. all of his career's kind of in this. And yeah. he did this thing, and it just showed me, like, he maybe is not quite ready to switch, or he needs, yeah, like, maybe it was overwritten.
Maybe
he just doesn't have that, like, kind of style within mm-hmm. him.
But it's interesting, though, because it was a beautiful film, like,
yeah,
aesthetically.
I mean, like, from a director of photography standpoint, yeah. he did a great job.
Right.
And the scoring was beautiful.
Yeah, the score was, like, incredible. I remember, yeah, it was a beautiful score.
But I don't think, like, writing-wise, it was that. And I think maybe part of that is just that...
He had it for too long.
He's doing Sunny the whole time.
Right.
That's what he's writing on the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. He does very little else.
Yeah.
Writing-wise.
Writing-wise, he does... Yeah, exactly.
I also think it's a lot to do all that plus star in your own movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like...
Write, direct, star, and then also write... direct, help edit, and star in a show.
Yeah,
as well at the same time.
It's like, maybe just direct it.
Yeah.
Maybe, and honestly, I kind of get it, because finding some, now I say this, but like, the musical Chaplin existed and people played that. But he's very good as like a Charlie Chaplin type.
Of course.
And he definitely has
that. He has that expressive face and like endearing qualities.
He has that. And I do think that really did read. I think he was well cast. But you already kind of know how I feel about directors being in their own movies.
Yeah.
Especially in extremely large parts.
Absolutely.
I'm not a huge fan. How well of a job can you really do?
Yeah.
If you're having to watch it and be in it, you can't do both. And I also just think that he worked on it for so long, he really wanted it to work, to the point that maybe he just didn't see its faults.
Right, maybe he was too close.
Yeah, a little too close. And when Guillermo del Toro is like, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
He was right, but I don't know that you fixed it.
I don't know if, maybe he couldn't have, though.
Yeah,
maybe
it was too late.
Maybe this is the best That
it could have been. Yeah, I mean, it was too late by the time you...
Right.
...are doing reshoots.
Yeah. I'd be interested if he makes another one, though.
Yeah, I mean, one that he spends some, like, less time on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know.
I just think that he and Glenn and Rob should just stop, or they should keep going doing Sunny, but then they should also just write a Broadway musical.
Agreed.
I think that's what they should do.
And, you know, I think that Charlie... When I think about, like, Rob and Glenn have seemed to have an easier time transitioning into a more authentic acting and writing sphere than Charlie has.
Right.
And I feel like when I think about Charlie Day's career, I can't really think of a single thing he's ever done that's, like, purely just, like, dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a more straight comedy than what he normally does. Like, Horrible Bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a pretty goofy, like, dude comedy.
Right. I'm trying to... Yeah.
Pacific Rim is kind of dramatic, but even then it's a goofy
He's the goofy guy.
Right.
In it, is the thing. Right. It is a drama. Yeah. It is a sci-fi drama, but he is the goofy guy.
Exactly.
In that.
Yeah. Versus you think about, like, Glenn Howard in right now.
In Blackberry.
Being not a funny character at all.
Right. And you haven't seen Mythic Quest.
No.
But it's a dramedy.
Right.
And Rob's character is wow. And his dramatic acting is incredible. Like, there are several points in Mythic Quest where Rob has brought me to tears with his dramatic acting.
And the thing is, I know Charlie Day can dramatic. He's done dramatic acting on Sunny.
Yeah, of course.
It's season 15, obviously.
The gang carries a dead body.
Incredibly heavy for Charlie on serious acting.
So he can do it.
I'd like to just see him do that for a little bit. You know what I mean? Show us that you can break out of that sphere. Because I feel like, to me right now, he's a little stuck in it.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see it for sure, though.
Yeah. I really wish I could see Blackberry.
Ugh. Blackberry's not showing anywhere around here.
The coastal elites
are
not allowing
they're hoarding us to it.
See Blackberry.
We should write to Glenn.
I messaged him on Instagram. Not that he's going to see it, but he posted something once about Blackberry being, like, expanded to other theaters, and I was like, but not fucking one in the state of Oklahoma. Interesting,
Glenn, interesting. And he's from the South.
I know.
He should know.
What the hell?
That Middle America wants it.
Yeah, I do. There are always Sunny fans here.
Yes. Absolutely.
Come on.
Anyway, what would you give this movie?
Pretty mid.
Yeah.
I guess I give it maybe a 5.
I'd give it a 5.
The story is not strong. It's not a very satisfying payoff.
No.
It's not very good arcs. It is beautiful.
I didn't hate my life watching it.
No, it's beautiful. It's got some funny jokes.
The score is great.
Yeah, the score is amazing.
Yeah, like, that's probably the best part of the whole movie. Like, the score is, like... But also, you know, Charlie's obviously a pretty musical guy, and he probably has good instincts about, like, what music goes where.
Yeah, it was just beautiful.
Yeah. Do you have a review?
I do. I can't tell if this review is satire or not. This is a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
The title is, I Get It. I imagine a reference to Danny DeVito.
Yes.
I get it. Okay. Latte Pronto is an allegory for Charlie Day. Charlie, while being very intelligent, is a simple soul.
Whoa.
He lives inside himself. You can see it in the way he interacts with those he
Did Charlie Day write
with.
This?
It's very odd, huh? I was like, you're really, really assuming you know a lot about Charlie Day.
Right.
This doesn't mean he has a quirk. Although Charlie Day is quirkiness personified, that's what makes him interesting in nearly everything he's appeared in. Latte Pronto is a passenger on a wild ride. It takes him to places normal people can never imagine. If you've spent as many hours with Charlie's work on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, my hometown, you know how many times he's the oddball. But you sense, much like Latte Pronto, that he's deep water and just relax and join him on his ride.
Whoa.
Spoiler, he speaks 3 times.
Whoa.
A very strange parasocial review.
Odd.
This has a horrible score on IMDb. Well, I mean, not horrible, 4.7, which is what basically we gave it, but.
Aw. Charlie.
Yeah, most people are just saying it's mid.
It is mid, though. That's true.
It has very few 10-star reviews. And not too many 1-star reviews, either, other than just being like, mm-hmm. I like Charlie Day, but this was boring as hell.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll just keep watching Sunny.
Yes.
And that's a fact.
And that's a fact.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will be coming at you with a Barbie episode in the next month.
Yes!
So look forward to that, babies.
Yay!
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.